I'm sorry. I have a headache through my entire body.
And my doctor, he don't help either. He told me to run 5 miles a day for 2 weeks. I called him up. I said, Doc, I'm 70 miles from my house.
Oh, you got that flu? Drink a lot of fluids and get plenty of rest. Man, I'm glad I ran into you. I was going to do wind sprints and dehydrate myself. Are you sure you're not a doctor?
I'm going to be sick.
All right, take it easy. I know stress is the number one cause of herpes. Headaches.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
I tell you, I meet the wrong people. That's my trouble. Like last week, I met the Surgeon General. He offered me a cigarette.
We found this one swimming naked in the fermentarium.
I am the Lizard Queen.
Give her this, and this, and then these.
Oh, thank you, Doctor.
No, I'm not a doctor.
You know, you should play with Dr. Beeper and myself. I mean, he's been club champion for 3 years running, and I'm no slouch myself.
Don't sell yourself short, Judge. You're a tremendous slouch.
They get better every week, don't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely.
3:10 on 580 CFRA as we welcome back for the Wednesday house call. Dr. Barry Dworkin, he's here until shortly before 4 o'clock with any health-related questions that you might have at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, or 1-800-580-CFRA. And Valerie's been waiting on the line already, doctor, so let's get right into the phone calls. Valerie, go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
Hi. My GP just shut his practice, so I thought I would just ask this question quickly to you. There's something I've noticed very recently that's kind of a little odd. When I'm, like, I'm a 48, very healthy, no issues, no health issues.
Okay.
And when I'm in bed, my heart will be going, you know, boom, boom, boom,
right.
boom, boom, and then it'll stop, and then it'll start again.
Your okay. heart will stop?
It will miss.
It's
well,
a,
yeah,
a skip,
it's like,
a skip beat.
It's like it skips a beat.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
And when that happens, I assume it's blood pressure. I can feel like my blood pressure dropping in the sternum area, and then it just goes back to normal, and you know, away I go again. And it does that probably every 2 to 5 minutes. And I don't notice it during the day. I'm not sure if it's happening during the day or if it's just because I'm active. So I was just wondering if this is like something that's just like normal or something I should get checked out.
It usually is quite normal to see what we call either extrasystolic beats or premature ventricular contractions or PVCs or skip beats. The question always comes up, when does this become clinically relevant? And it becomes clinically relevant if someone is having symptoms associated with it. And by symptoms, it could be fainting, you know, dropping to the floor, for example. When you're active and playing a sport, all of a sudden you just, you know, your legs give out and you just fall down. Or the heartbeat starts to increase, and that is reach a rate of 150, 160, 170, and it goes on for about 5 or 10 minutes, which would indicate, you know, what we call an arrhythmia. And so those are instances where it becomes more of a concern when something happens. When you have an extra beat or if you have a sudden pause, that's actually extremely common. Many people have this. And as you pointed out, during the day, you don't even notice because you're busy and active and your senses are being stimulated by everything else going on around you. So there's less attention paid to internal workings of the body. But when you're lying down in bed, all you're hearing is your heartbeat. Everything is relatively quiet. And so you pick up that particular change. So it's unlikely to have a dramatic effect on blood pressure if it's just one skipped beat because your heart picks up right afterwards. And so your blood pressure may dip by a couple of points, but you're lying down and it's unlikely to cause any fainting. So the bottom line to this is if it's something you're not noticing during the day, you're exercising, you're active, and there's really nothing much going on, not much to do about it. It's more if this was happening, not just one skip beat every so often, but, you know, it would skip and then you'd get runs of very fast heart rate after that. Or it would skip and then skip again and then skip again. Within a minute, you'd have like four or five or five times, six times. Then you would want to do what we call a Holter monitor, which would measure and monitor your heart rate over 24 hours to look for any changes or arrhythmias. But the occasional skip beat, probably not too much to do about it.
Okay, so as long as it's just occasionally, you would say like if it was up to 4 or 5 times in a minute? then that would be something that I would want to.
And consistently so. So not just for that minute, but the following minute and the minute after that and the minute after that. If you saw and you monitored that happening, that would indicate that there was a conduction problem. But the occasional skip beat is something that is considered to be within the normal functioning of the heart itself.
Okay. So it sounds like it's no problem. If it did get to that point, just for curiosity's sake,
sure,
where would someone that does not have a GP anymore go with something like that? Would you go to a clinic, or?
Yeah, you could go into a drop-in center. The other place to go when this happens is that the University of Ottawa, the family medicine centers in the University of Ottawa, which are the teaching centers, do accept new patients. So those are always open. They are supervised by family physicians who are teaching the family medicine residents. We all did that as part of our training. The service is actually quite good. It tends to be, frankly, even more thorough sometimes because the residents are learning so that they do more and they spend more time with each of the patients. So that could be an option for you.
So again, where is that?
There's two places. There's Elizabeth Briere, which is right near here, and there's also the Melrose Family Medicine Center, which is near connected to the Civic Hospital. And I believe there's one that's now starting up near St. Vincent's as well. So there's three centers that people can go to if they don't have a family doctor.
Okay. And you can actually get a family doctor there?
Yes, you will likely get one of the residents that are assigned to you, but they're supervised by the family doctor that's there, and they review everything that goes on. And that will be able to provide you with at least some access, because then you can get all the things done that you need to have done.
That's great information.
Yeah.
Valerie, we're going to move along. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, guys.
You're very welcome.
521-TALK, 521-8255. Star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-CFRA if you have a health-related question for Dr. Barry Dworkin. John in Westboro.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Dr. Dworkin, about 6 or 8 weeks ago, I started grinding my teeth during the day and during the evening. And like it just goes on nonstop, all my waking hours, I'm grinding my teeth. And I called my pharmacist to see if this might be a side effect to some medication I'm taking, but I've been on those medications for well over a year.
Mm-hmm. John?
Yeah?
Did you vote liberal?
You know, I can't say.
You're so bad, Rob.
you might have a point. Maybe, coincide with about that time, too.
I'm just teasing, John. I'm sorry.
McGinty's to blame for everything. So I asked the pharmacist, and he asked me, he says, do your legs shake? And I said, well, yeah, they do. I'll be watching television or on the computer, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, my legs start shaking violently.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a case of the dropsies as well, dropping a coffee mug 3 times. And so I'm going to check with my doctor, but what do you think there, Dr. Dworkin?
Well, again, what we call bruxism, which is grinding of teeth, can occur for many reasons. One is, you know, people who concentrate more, doing more, anxiety can do that. In terms of neurological things causing bruxism, usually that would be associated with some neuromuscular or tremor-like condition. But again, that in and of itself, the bruxism or the clenching of the jaw in and of itself is difficult to, on the basis of that particular symptom, create a differential diagnosis of things. Restless legs, sometimes if you have that and the legs are shaking, again, this needs to be looked at with regards to, is it the nerve or the muscles themselves that are damaged that are leading to those changes in the legs? Certain medications can also cause this to happen. The pharmacist is correct. And sometimes even long-term use of medications that previously didn't cause a problem, as we get older, sometimes the dose needs to be adjusted because of the way we metabolize things, because it changes over time. So there are various things to look at, but what I would suggest is if you have, and frankly what concerns me more is the leg shaking when you're sitting down, is to have that looked at, either by a neurologist or also your family doctor to look for any muscle diseases or conditions that can cause the muscles to do that. So it's not something I would just sort of say, well, let's wait and see. The fact is, if this is something new where you've been clenching your jaw more recently and you hadn't been doing that before, certainly indicates that there has been something within your body that's changed, and so you have to start from the basement, frankly, and work your way up and look at each of the systems that could potentially cause that condition.
Okay. Well, I see my doctor on the 22nd, so I guess she'll make the appropriate referrals at that time. But yeah, it just come out of nowhere. All of a sudden, I'm grinding my teeth and clenching my jaw. And so again,
when there's a sudden change, that's usually a sign that something has happened, either internally or externally, or something you have consumed or medications that you've taken that your body is now reacting to, or there's been a disease process that started up that has started anew. So it has to be taken as an initial sign of something, and we need to evaluate it. You know, it's not as if you've had this for years. It just suddenly appeared.
Yeah. Crazy at 52. Okay, Dr. Dworkin.
Good luck, John.
I appreciate speaking.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call.
I love it when you're on the radio. You're so patient a guy.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Yep, we're lucky to have him. And Dr. Barry Dworkin is here until about 10 minutes before 4. So for the next 30 minutes or so, I encourage you to call right now if you have a health-related question at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, or 1-800-580-CFRA. Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's the Wednesday House Call. And Betty, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Dworkin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm having a terrible problem when I go to bed at night. It doesn't seem to bother me during the day, but mm-hmm. I have a gnawing pain. It feels like it's going right into my bone. It wakes me up, and a little bit in my arm as well, but basically my leg. It wakes me up, and if I get up and move, it seems fine, but the minute I get back in bed, it starts again. It actually keeps me awake. Now, my doctor, I got a doctor a couple years ago finally, mm-hmm. and she said it was okay. My muscles tested okay. And she took me off Lipitor for a month to see if that was it. And then she changed my Cardis. And then that didn't work. So in the fall, she told me to start drinking tonic water for the quinine in it, mm-hmm. which I've been doing. And it doesn't seem to make any difference. And I don't know what to do anymore. And I don't know if it's all related. But the other thing is if I sit in a chair, whether it's soft or hard, it hurts to get up. Like my thigh mm-hmm. muscles.
Now it's your thigh. So I was going to ask the part of the leg that is bothering you the most is which part?
Oh, when it's at nighttime, it's down in my lower leg.
Okay, so it's the calves, the calf muscle.
No, it's not the calf. It's right. It's like right in the front. Even it's like as though it's okay. In the bone, deep, penetrating, gnawing. It just I don't know what to do. And I get up, and I take Tylenol.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more if I get up and move it, and I don't know what it is or what to do.
Okay, and it's both legs?
More my right than my left.
Okay, and you said during the day, it's less of an issue.
Yeah, hardly. I don't even think about it.
Okay.
It doesn't seem to bother me. So the getting up does, though, out of a chair.
So when you get out of the chair, it does hurt a little bit.
But that's more my thighs now.
Okay.
It's a difference. I'm just wondering if it's related. It may not be related.
It sounds like there's two different things going on. The key thing to what you're saying is that when you are essentially immobile and lying down, the pain will come up in the leg. Whereas
yeah.
when you're moving around, there is less pain, especially during the day. So what we have to look at are several factors. The first is this blood flow issue? Is this a blood pressure problem or a blockage of the legs? Well, usually you get more pain when you're moving around than not moving around when you have peripheral arterial disease. So that's unlikely to be the cause, but still something to perhaps look at. The other is there any nerve condition, any nerve compression going on in that part of the leg that's causing that pain? Is there any other underlying diseases that you're being treated for? For example, you have blood pressure medications and likely cholesterol problems. So there is a risk of small arteries being blocked and potentially damage to the nerves themselves. And again, when we are lying down at night, we tend to be less attuned to the pains that we feel because we're not as busy. So what I would suggest for the leg, if it hasn't been done already, because there is obviously something going on, it's waking you up. So it's severe enough to disrupt your sleep cycle, is to have the blood pressure is checked in your leg. There's something called a ABI, ankle brachial index, where they measure blood pressures in the ankle and in the arm.
It's called an ABI test?
ABI. The other is perhaps to look with what's called a Doppler. Well, they look at the actual blood flow to the legs. There's also tests to check the nerve conduction in the legs to see if there's any damage to the nerves running into the leg itself. So there are various things that can be done to assess what is happening in the leg itself. Again, if this was a disease of the bone per se, where you have that, as you mentioned, it feels like it goes all over, you would also have that pain during the day, because if the bone is damaged, it's going to be damaged during the day as well. The fact that it tends to be much less severe during the day when you're moving around tells me that there may be something with perhaps blood flow, or even how the nerve, perhaps a nerve is being compressed while you're lying down. So that's sort of the starting point to try and evaluate what's going on with that lower leg. Because it is, sometimes you'll have restless leg syndrome at night, or what we call nocturnal leg cramps, but it doesn't sound like it's a cramp. It sounds like, from what you're describing, it's not the muscle that's cramping up on you.
Have to wrap it up there. Okay. We'll be back after the news on CFRA.
And why does that pharmacist have to be 2.5 feet higher than everybody else? Who the hell is this guy? Clear out, everybody. I'm working with pills up here. I'm taking them from this big bottle, and then I'm going to put them in a little bottle. That's my whole job. I can't be down on the floor with you people. Yes, I'd like to get this prescription filled, please. All right, but you wait down there. No one comes up here but me.
Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's a Wednesday house call. 521-TALK, *580, or 1-800-580-CFRA. The next caller is in Shawville. June, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Dr. Dworkin.
Yes.
I've been having serious problems since almost 8 months now, the diarrhea and throwing up. Like it's 3 or 4 times a day, and I've been on every pill, and they can't figure out what's going on with me. And I'm just wondering if it has anything to do with my nervous system, because I've been through quite a bit of tragedy this year.
Well, I guess my question would be to you, what things have they done so far to evaluate this condition? What kind of tests have they done?
Oh, I've had X-rays, CAT scans.
Have they done, for example, colonoscopy, where they look with a scope that they look inside the intestine, or
no? When I've got polyps, or I did have polyps before, but they didn't do that test.
Okay, and no scopes to look down into the stomach, you know, where they go through the throat to look at the stomach?
Yeah, I thought that's what they do, but no.
They haven't done that either. Because, you know, vomiting and diarrhea for 8 months is certainly a long time. And the question then becomes, you know, other medical conditions that can do that. But ultimately, for patients that are having that, usually you do scopes as well to look for ulcerations or damage to the either to the stomach, which can certainly do that. For diarrhea, you look for infectious processes, sometimes inflammatory processes, and sometimes a colonoscopy is very helpful in doing that. So the next steps, if they've done everything else, is to inquire about seeing a gastroenterologist, a specialist in that, to be able to look and see if there's any damage to those tissues.
Good luck, June. Let's move along to Dawn on line 3. There we go. Dawn.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. I'm a patient with lung cancer at the beginning of stage 3.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you a very short bit of history here, it was discovered 4.5 years ago by a respirologist, the first one that I had seen, and he did some scan and an X-ray, and he discovered, oh, my God, I think you've got lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, a few years later, I did basic CT scans through my GP. And then she thought it was time for me to see another respirologist at the Ottawa General. So he did his work on bone scan and whatever else. And then he decided to get me into an oncologist because the situation was slowly becoming worse.
Okay.
So I've got a mass on my right along with a lot of little holes and this and that. And anyway, cancer did not show up in the bone scan. Cancer did not show up in the extended blood test. So they're saying that the cancer is just focused on the lung areas.
Okay.
Okay. And as I mentioned, the oncologist decided now you're at the beginning of stage 3. Treatment was mentioned, but I turned it down considering all the factors.
Okay. Don, just hold on, because that has kind of shocked the doctor here. Why did you do that?
Okay, hold on. I did some research on that, not just in relation to the cancer, but my overall scenario in relation to realistic and non-realistic reasons.
Okay.
And along with people telling me, some people get sicker if they get into treatment rather than not taking treatment. And that was another factor that I considered.
Okay.
It was it consisted of a lot of running around, and I didn't think I had the physical stamina to take it.
Okay, so what's the question, Don?
Well, the question is, based on what the latest oncologist has told me, even after the PET scan, what do you think is going to happen in the future?
Your cancer is going to get worse.
Yeah, I know it's going to get worse, but you know, I've been thinking of a timeline here. And I'm saying to myself, I may not be here sometime next year.
It certainly, timelines are very difficult to predict with cancer. The issue is with no treatment, the timeline's going to be likely shorter. If the cancer is not spread to the bones and it's in the lung, stage three is still a pretty advanced cancer. Also, I don't know whether it's bronchogenic or adenocarcinoma or what kind of cancer it is, and I'm not privy to that information. So the point being, though, is that certainly chemotherapy and radiation treatments certainly are taxing. They usually take that in consideration when they check and do an evaluation on physical stamina and emotional strength as well. But nevertheless, not treating it at all means that your life will certainly be much shorter than with treatment, because the treatment will tend to shrink down the tumors. It'll tend to give you a little bit more increased lifespan. Obviously, and the important question is what the quality of life will be with treatment versus no treatment. But that's something, again, that you have to have that discussion with your oncologist to base the opinion on their experience of having patients similar to you and what their experience have been, or even getting in contact with people, because there's lots of organizations to discuss what their experiences are with chemo and such in those situations, or even family members of people who have had that condition.
Okay. It's a little heavy duty for this hour.
Hmm.
Harvey in Ottawa. Harvey?
Good afternoon, doctor.
Hi.
Yeah. 3 years ago, a fella phoned you, and he said he's a drinker. He drink and he goes to bed, he goes right to sleep, and then an hour or so later, he wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that alcohol will put you to sleep and alcohol will wake you up. I quit drinking, it'll be 3 years ago next month, and I haven't had a proper night's sleep since. What can be done about that?
Well, sleep disorders, you have to keep in mind, sleep disorders are very complex in terms of how we gauge ourselves and conduct ourselves. So the first thing we do is usually do an evaluation of someone's sleep pattern, when they go to bed, when they wake up, what they're doing just prior to bedtime. Do they stay in bed even though they can't fall asleep? Are they able to fall asleep, but then they wake up in the middle of the night and can't fall back asleep? Do they wake up multiple times during the night? Is there a possibility of sleep apnea, because that's another component that can interfere with sleep? Are there medications that they're taking that can interfere with that? So there's a lot of different factors that can interfere with sleep. The most common causes of sleep problems in people who are otherwise healthy is usually their lifestyle. That is, they tend to sleep in on weekends. They disrupt their sleep cycle. They try and go to bed at a usual time. They can't fall asleep. So it perpetuates a complete disruption and literally a physical disruption of the pathways in the brain, an area called the reticular formation, that is responsible for establishing normal sleep patterns. And one of the ways to reestablish that is the brute force method. And the brute force method is called the 15-minute rule. The 15-minute rule is you go to bed at a specific time with the intention of waking up at the same time in the morning. If after 15 minutes you haven't fallen asleep, you get out of bed and you do something to try and make yourself tired. It can be reading, watching TV, doesn't matter. But you have to be outside of bed, because if you're in bed and tossing and turning, your body and brain gets trained to know that when you go to bed, you're not going to fall asleep. So after 15 minutes, out of bed. You go back to bed, 15 minutes, can't fall asleep, back out of bed. And you do that over and over and over again. And usually people don't sleep the entire night because they can't fall asleep in that 15 minutes. But for most people, after doing this for 2 weeks, right, and it doesn't mean you're not going to be sleeping, but after doing this for 2 weeks, your brain starts to be retrained and you're able to fall asleep at the appropriate time. But it's a very regimented treatment, and the sleep labs and the sleep centers will recommend this approach first before you do any sleep studies, because you want to try and establish a normal routine. So certainly alcohol may knock you out because it's a depressant, but stopping the alcohol and not drinking anymore is not what has caused the sleep disruption. There is likely some other factor that has contributed to it. The fact that there's no drug in your body now that can damage the brain is a good thing. So something else is likely contributing to this issue.
Last call on the Wednesday house call is Julie in Kanata.
Hey there, Dr. Dorkin.
Hi.
So I have a lighter question, I think, I hope, okay. To end the show on. I'm just hoping you can tell me where I might locate kidney pain, because I've had a lower back ache now for 2 weeks, and no fever, nothing specific, and there's no athletic injury or anything like that. But it's in the sort of what I would imagine to be the flank area, but, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Well, your kidneys are located behind your rib cage in your back. So they're actually up in the mid-back area. They're completely covered by your ribs in order to protect them. So any pain that you're experiencing below the ribs is unlikely to be kidney pain. So that's the first in terms of anatomy. Low back pain is very common. Most commonly, it's muscle that's been torn, especially if it's in the flank area. If it was flank pain from kidneys, it's usually a kidney stone, and that pain is excruciating. You wouldn't be on the phone talking to me in a very pleasant voice. You would be really agitated because of that pain. It's extremely severe. It's sudden in onset, usually lasts until the stone passes through. There's usually blood in the urine. The pain radiates from the mid-back area all the way around the side down to the groin. That tends to be the type of pain you get with renal colic or kidney stones. An infected kidney would give you pain in that area of the rib. Be very tender when you sort of would poke on it or bang on the back. But you also would have an extremely high fever and look what we call a person to be toxic, sweaty, sometimes confused, looking really unwell. But pain that's just in the lower back without any of those symptoms is unlikely to be kidney pain. A very easy way in terms of a workup is just do a simple urine test to look and see if there's anything going on in the urinary tract. But again, pain in that lower back area is likely musculoskeletal in origin and tends to disappear on its own regardless of any procedures that we do.
Okay.
Good luck, Julie.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Thanks for all your calls on the Wednesday house call. Dr. Dworkin is back on Sunday at 4?
At 4 o'clock.
At 4. Okay. And don't forget, health headlines with Dr. Dworkin 10 minutes before 7 every morning during Madeley in the Morning.